Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rhoda. Our guest today is Josh Scherer, author of The Culinary Brodown Cookbook, based on Josh's popular blog of the same name. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I didn't expect the intro to include kitchens of the world's best cooks. Now I feel like the game is totally on a different level.
Anthony Bourdain has been on this podcast. Where have you been? This is
I feel totally ashamed to even be in the same category as, but like, hopefully I can step up.
Before we get started, a quick word from this week's podcast sponsor. Whether you're looking for flavor adventure or simply better tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands. Because by sun-drying many of their spices and de-stemming their chili peppers by hand, Spice Islands uses a craft approach to capture the volatile oil, which gives flavor to each spice. And whether it be Saigon cinnamon, dillweed, bay leaves, garlic powder, cumin, or turmeric, they maintain a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. Well, I really, I love your work, and I've loved your Instagram for a long time. And, you know, your work really satirizes a lot of things about, quote unquote, foodie culture and also junk food and kind of the extremism of the American relationship with food and also bro culture with kind of equal abandon. So I want to first ask you kind of what are your earnest feelings about being a bro or bro culture in America and being a bro in the kitchen and about food in general?
Oh my God, earnest feelings. Those are the hardest ones to figure out.
I know, we're starting it right off.
Yeah, no, I mean, I honestly think that's one of the reasons I started the blog, is to kind of like use it as a space for me to kind of figure out how I even feel about that. Because one of the recipes that kind of like blew up for me really early on was for the ramen donut, aka the ram nut. No copyright pending on that, so feel free to steal it. But it was a donut made out of ramen noodles, right? So you like boil the ramen in horchata to sweeten them up, let them set, you know, cut them into like rounds and then fry them. And it was supposed to be a total parody. It was like the two biggest foods of the time were the ramen burger and the cronut. And so I figured, you know, what if you just kind of spliced them together and made a ramen nut? And it kind of, you know, went big. And I don't think a lot of people got that it was supposed to be basically a huge joke. And so everyone was like, you know, I was getting like weird, like not necessarily death threats, but like weird hate emails that was like, you're the reason diabetes exists in America. Like, you're the reason childhood obesity, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, holy hell, this was a joke. If you actually want to talk about childhood obesity, like call your congressman, like get them to introduce healthier school lunches. I'm not the reason that this is happening per se. And so, yeah, things kind of tend to snowball very quickly. But I think, you know, I don't know. I didn't want to take anything too seriously because I feel like that is, I don't know, when business is kind of intertwined with, like, the silliest thing in the world, like, Dominique Ancel literally just fried croissant dough and covered it in sugar and created, like, a multi-million dollar empire out of it, which is super strange to me because it's, like, that's such a whimsical idea. But now he's, like, sending cease and desist letters to small bakeries in Maine who are doing the same thing, which is not very whimsical at all. And so I honestly don't know what kind of my general feelings on it are. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of wanted a space to explore that. And I'm still trying to figure it out.
You have a pretty far-ranging culinary education. Can you talk a little bit about kind of how you learned to cook, how you fell in love with food, and when it really became your passion and you thought, I'm going to make a career out of this?
Yeah, so I learned to cook really by just watching a ton of Food Network. You know, I was a latchkey kid raised by a single dad, and he, you know, had to commute like an hour and a half to work. And so I would be just like alone after school from like, you know, 3 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night. And it was literally just, you know, Emeril, Rachel Ray, Tyler Florence, Bobby Flay, the kind of early era of Guy Fieri a little bit. They were basically like surrogate parents to me. And so I would just like park myself in front of the TV and just kind of like absorb all this knowledge. And then, you know, when my dad would come home, I'd, you know, have some sort of like gnocchi with gorgonzola cream sauce on the table that I saw Rachel Ray make earlier or something, even though it was totally inedible. That was literally the first recipe I ever tried to make. And it was like the gnocchi were so dense that you couldn't physically eat it. So I like really got into cooking, you know, through that. And then my dad actually made it like my daily chore to make dinner for the family. And so I, you know, from age like 12 to 18, I was just cooking every single night. And then I went to college on a track and field scholarship. I kind of like thought about culinary school a little bit, but I really wanted to play sports. And so I kind of, you know, ended up doing that. And by the time I got to like my third year in college, I kind of realized that there was no like direct track for me to like get into the food world. I was a political science major, and I hate both politics and science. And so like that was not going to work out for me at all. And so I just kind of figured, you know, the best way to get my ideas out there was just to buy a domain name for like $4 and start putting stuff out on the internet. But as things kind of started to progress, I got more and more serious about it. And I was like, maybe I could actually turn this into some sort of a career. And so I think the biggest thing was I just kind of said yes to every opportunity that came along. You know, I mean, I got hooked up with the publisher, Grand Central, who published the book that just came out like a week ago. So that was an awesome opportunity, but there were kind of like little things along the way. Like a reality show TV producer asked me to do like a run through for a random cooking competition show they were producing. And then I was there and I met a chef named Chris Morningstar, who's from LA. And he was like, hey, if you're serious about cooking, like come help me out with these pop-ups. I'm running a catering company right now. And so, you know, I would just on the weekends, while I was still in college, I would go, you know, cook with one of LA's best chefs, working the line at his pop-ups and stuff like that. And so, it really all just kind of like, it was like a strange whirlwind where just different opportunities came up and I kind of just took my shot at all of them. And then, you know, got my first actual like food writing job after college. And, you know, I'm just kind of been committed to that, but still trying to see where things are going.
For noticeably richer flavors in your recipes, opt for premium spices from Spice Islands. By sun-drying many of their spices and de-stemming their chili peppers by hand, Spice Islands uses a craft approach to deliver the most authentic and intense flavor possible. They also take the extra steps to ensure richer flavors, like waiting for their dill weed to bloom before harvesting or milling their garlic to a true powder so it doesn't add grittiness to your dishes. Better yet, they maintain a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. So whether you're looking for a flavor adventure or simply better-tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands and taste the difference in every bottle. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, including one for spiced maple carrots, a quick simple side to complement any meal. That's spiceislands.com/clever and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. Now, back to our podcast. So the cookbook is obviously a big part of growing the brand and kind of presenting it to more people in a different medium. What was it like to translate your ideas into a book, and how do you think it's different from other cookbooks out there? What cookbooks inspired you? What's kind of your relationship with the cookbook as an art form and culinary medium?
Oh man, translating the ideas into the book was it was difficult. I kind of knew writing a cookbook was something I wanted to do. And then, you know, when I actually got all the paperwork figured out and signed the deal and it was actually time to write the cookbook, I was like, holy crap, I don't know what I'm going to put in this thing or what it's going to be about or literally anything. And, you know, we went through a couple iterations. Like, I didn't know how much of it was, you know, supposed to be kind of like parody because if you buy a cookbook, you still want to be able to cook from it. I actually remember I tried to put in a chapter in the initial proposal that was all about cooking with energy drinks because I just thought it was hilarious. And Red Bull vinaigrette's not too bad. But I sent the proposal and my agent was like, but do any of these actually taste good? And I was like, no, not really. It kind of tastes like poison actually. And he was like, why would we have it in here? And I was like, I don't know, man. And so it was kind of a rough process to kind of figure it out. But I knew one thing I wanted to do. There are a lot of these kind of like very male centric cookbooks out there, you know, kind of like dude foods, man munchies, stuff like that. And I always kind of thought those books were really pandering in a way. Like none of them kind of had the emotional depth. Not that I guess everyone looks for emotional depth in a cookbook, but I sure do. And so a lot of them were just, you know, like I don't know, make these macho nachos, and it's just like a can of black beans on some chips. And I was like, I didn't really want to do that. Like, I wanted to put some sort of kind of emotional sincerity in there. I wanted to, you know, talk about like what it means for me to be like a bro who cooks, I guess, because that was something that I never really saw like super represented, at least in like this kind of lifestyle cookbook space. And that was one of the reasons I started the blog too, is because everything I read on the internet, like nothing really kind of reflected my experiences in cooking. It seemed like most of these blogs and most of these cookbooks, the ones that aren't written by professional chefs, at least, are, you know, these people who have all these like happy childhood food memories of, you know, their grandma rolling pasta, or, you know, going to like some summer home where their dad would, I don't know, roast a whole lamb and throw these giant parties. And I was like, look, I grew up eating rice-a-roni, and I just wanted to learn how to make stuff better. And this is kind of where I ended up.
So let's talk about some of the food in the book specifically, some of the not Red Bull vinaigrette recipes, but the recipes that ended up in there that people really love to cook, your kind of go-tos for entertaining and weeknight dinners, the recipes that you keep coming back to and your audience comes back to again and again.
Yeah, yeah. So I think my single favorite recipe in the book, I know you're not supposed to like have a favorite child, but I think you totally can. And mine is the pork belly tacos with fish sauce caramel. It's something that I actually made for my brother's bachelor party a couple of years ago. We had like an Airbnb in Austin for like 10 people, and they all really wanted me to cook a meal. And I kind of just like sat down with some of the guys, and we were just throwing together ideas, and I just kind of ended up with this. So you take like pork belly and you braise it for a long time, and then you cube it, and then you chill it, and then you fry it, and then you make this like super awesome Vietnamese fish sauce caramel, where you caramelize sugar so it's all melty and like just to the point of burning, and then you add fish sauce and lime, and you like steep it in all these aromatics, and you toss it with the pork belly, and it's just like flavors that you've never had before coming together in different ways. And then of course you eat it in a taco, because like, who wants to use a fork at a bachelor party in Austin? But I also, grew up in Little Saigon. It's a big Vietnamese neighborhood in Orange County. And so like, you know, these are kind of flavors that I was used to eating, growing up. And I just kind of wanted to, you know, put them together in a kind of fun and unique way. But yeah, so that, I mean, that's one of the recipes that I make just all the time. I'll like make them and bring them to football games and stuff. And another thing was, you know, we actually shot a lot of the book at a tailgate party at a football game. So like basically the entire grilling section, was just stuff that like I've, you know, actually make all the time. Like there's that kind of like Korean marinated, skirt steak recipe, which is something that like I've been making at tailgates for years. 'Cause you can just, you know, bring the marinated meat and giant Ziploc bags and just throw it on the grill, and it's super easy. Yeah.
What's the one recipe that you most regret coming up with since starting Culinary Bro-Down, or the one thing that you most regret eating, if any?
Oh my God. Oh, that's a hell of a question. You know, it might be, it's probably got to be the ramen donut. It didn't end up in the book, and I kind of didn't want it to end up in there. But that ended up being like a huge kind of, it's like both a blessing and a plague in a way. I made it, and a lot of people thought it was hilarious. A lot of people really didn't like it. But it just blew up on the internet so hard. Like BuzzFeed picked it up. It ended up on like the Filipino Cosmo.com website. Like it just went so far and wide, and it like became bigger than I could control. And so for a while I was just known as the Ramnut guy. And so I think that I don't call it a regret. I don't know that I would do anything differently. But that is the one thing that I kind of look back on and I'm just like, maybe could have been executed different.
And what is the one current food trend that you really hate right now, or something that you hope never becomes trendy, some pet peeves in the food world at the moment?
Oh God. Right. Yeah. No, there's a huge one right now. It's been burgeoning for a while and now it's just over the top. The whole activated charcoal thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, one that speaks to, you know, people just loving the appearance of food over the way it tastes. because we've seen that with like the whole rainbow trend, with the rainbow bagels and with all this stuff. But there are like two soft serve ice cream places within a mile of where I live that both do this just like jet black, super gross looking ice cream. And they're like in a war with each other to like get new, you know, customers. And they keep making their ice cream blacker and blacker. And it started out just looking like a kind of pale gray. And now both of them are just adding a bunch of food coloring to it. And it's like staining people's teeth. It is like the weirdest thing. Yeah, it's bizarre. And so I hope that just like dies in a fire somewhere.
Josh, thank you so much for coming to talk with us today. This was really fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Check out the cookbook, The Culinary Brodown Cookbook, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.